Welcome to the Netzpolitik Podcast. My name is Markus Beckedahl. My guest today is Jeremy Zimmermann, co-founder of La Quadrature du Net from Paris and France.
Hallo.
Hi. So, shall we do it in German?
Nein, bitte.
Okay. Yeah, you are here for our upcoming Republika, which will happen between 5th to 7th of May in Berlin. And we wanted to do this podcast because you also do have a surveillance debate in France.
Yes.
And we in Germany, we always try to find out what's happening there. Mm-hmm. We have our own surveillance scandal with our secret services, but because of the language barriers between France and Germany, we know a bit about what's happening in Paris, but we hope that you can give us some introduction.
Yes, here for some cultural exchange about surveillance across Europe. The day Republika will begin on May the 5th will be adopted. Sorry for the spoiler, but I can already tell you the end of this part of the story, will be adopted in first reading in Assemblée Nationale, the first chamber, this so-called intelligence bill that actually should be called surveillance law because it's really about surveillance, which is probably the most disturbing law regarding surveillance and personal data we've seen in France in a very, very long time. It's very peculiar because, well, first of all, indeed, it comes in the wake of the early January violent attacks and the mass murder at Charlie Hebdo and the such. So it is, in the form of the process, a very vibrant example of the notorious shock doctrine theoreticized by Naomi Klein, where a shock in public opinion, a shock in the population, is being politically instrumentalized to have adopted what would have been unacceptable in another context. So the law is being rushed in an emergency, in a fast-track procedure, which makes it that there will be only one reading in both chambers. And then if there are differences between the chambers, instead of going back for second reading and so forth, it is being negotiated between seven selected members of the two assemblies. So it will go extremely fast. And there is less than 1 month between the publication of the law and its adoption in the parliament. So we are used to this kind of process, but on such a complicated and crucial issue, it is really, really damaging to the public debate to start with. Then about the content of the law, we have the very strong impression that the French secret services drafted it as their dream law. We recall, you may have heard of it, that 2-3 years ago, the head of French secret services got charged, convicted, for violating the sources of a journalist in the super inflammable Bettencourt case, a super high-level corruption scandal involving the richest person in France. So apparently at the time, Nicolas Sarkozy asked head of French Secret Service, tell me who is leaking to the press. And the guy did so, and then got charged. So we have the impression that this whole bill is drafted in great part, so there won't be any more such a case as l'affaire des Fadettes, that the secret services cannot be caught anymore when they're seen doing any wrongdoing. So the content of the law itself is extremely disturbing on many regards. First of all is made to make sure that there will not be the judicial judge anymore anywhere in the surveillance process. What we say, what seems to be an acceptable compromise, is that targeted surveillance is sometimes necessary and is sometimes acceptable when properly democratically framed, which means under control by an independent and impartial judicial judge. Surveillance, when properly targeted, can be okay. This is how it usually works. This is the political compromise we're supposed to live in, given the separation of powers. Because surveillance is super high power, we do not let this in the hands of the executive Only the judicial judge can decide whether or not it is legitimate, whether or not it is proportionate. So this French intelligence bill, this French surveillance law, makes it that the judge is nowhere in the equation and creates a fantasy commission that will indeed be understaffed, which members will indeed be handpicked and will be easy to manipulate and so on, that recreate a kind of fake oversight process. And of course, the Minister of Interior and the rapporteur of the law, Jean-Jacques Urvoas, say, oh, but look, there is oversight. When the whole thing is a construction to make you believe there is oversight, but to replace the only oversight that is valid in democracy, which is the judicial judge. So that is the spirit of the law. Get surveillance out of the hands of the judicial order, out of control from the judicial order. Then, also disturbing, is legalization of mass surveillance, period. And here the argument of French government is, well, we're most probably doing it already, and it's illegal, therefore we need a law to make it legal. And I'll get back to this because I think this is one of the ideological cores we are facing and combating here. So the use of IMSI catchers, those wide nets that capture every mobile communication within a given geographical range, legal. The use of those black box spying equipment that the secret services will now be able to put at the core of the network infrastructure, and with a top secret seal so nobody can speak about it, and that will use, listen to that, algorithms to detect suspicious behaviors in order to identify potential future terrorists. In non-bullshit terms, it means deep packet inspection. And of course, government says, oh no, it's not mass surveillance because we'll only look at the ones we're interested in.
Oh, we know it from Germany.
Yes, because of course, to look at the ones you're interested in, you have to look at everyone's communication. So all this, legal. No debate, no question. It is being done. Therefore, it must be legal. And fortunately, we don't apply the same to, I don't know, you know, murder or rape or whatever, saying, oh, it's being done, therefore it must be legal, you know. And so that's one big problem here, is that with the rushed procedure, we do not have a public debate. And the debate we should have would be what security model for what society. And we do not have this debate. The only thing there is rush, 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 it's against the terrorists. And no question asked whether or not this hyper-security model, comparable to what is being done and what is failing in the US right now, is legitimate or not. A third point that makes it even more unacceptable is that the motives according to which surveillance will be perfectly okay is widened in an unprecedented way. You have a bit of a text that says that collective violence caused with the intent to breach public order justify everything. So any protest where two people break some urban furniture, boom, you're in. Another of the seven new motives is defense of the major economic interest of France. Not only the essential economic interest as it was in the first draft, now it's a major economic. So Areva, doing nuclear shit job, and cracking the pots of its nuclear factories, that's a major interest. So if you're against nuclear energy, too bad, you're in. If you're against fracking, you're in. If you're denouncing a corruption scandal with a weapon manufacturer, major economic interest, you're in. The same goes for foreign policy interests of France. So are you against the intervention of Israel in Palestine? Too bad for you. Are you against the intervention of France in Syria, in Mali? Too bad. So for about, as to summarize, for about any motive, not only the Secret Services, but also the police and the customs administration will be able to do any kind of surveillance, including in a targeted way to plant bugs and cameras in people's home, but also to listen to the whole traffic of an internet service provider, of a node, of a branch of the internet, or to deploy IMSI catchers without any form of judicial supervision. It is, It's unfair to compare that to the Patriot Act because it's a very different legal regime and different bits in the law. But the orders of magnitude of increased power and of increased range of possibilities for surveillance and the increased scope of who will fall under this surveillance is, I think, comparable to the Patriot Act. It is a major, major violation, not only of our fundamental rights, but also of the separation of powers and of the rule of law.
You do have a constitutional court.
Yes.
Will it be? What will it do?
So, before we even get there, we actually, as of today, have a tremendous opposition to the law being structured. So right now is the parliamentary recess. So the members of the parliament are on vacation. So they consider the law the week before last. They went for 2 weeks vacation. They come back on Monday the 4th and vote on Tuesday the 5th.
Okay, and who's in power in France? Maybe we should give some more explore.
Exactly. So, François Hollande is the French president.
He's a social democrat, or socialist, as you call
They're called Parti Socialiste, but it's an insult to the memory of socialism to call them that.
In Germany, it would be a
social democrat. Yes. So, the prime minister, Manuel Valls, is known for a long time to be the right wing of this center-right party, that is the Socialist Party in France.
And who is a coalition partner?
There is no coalition
in
France.
They have majority.
One majority, one opposition. That's how it goes. We don't do coalitions. And so Manuel Valls is the right winger in the party. He's prime minister, and he's surprisingly following the steps of Nicolas Sarkozy, who was, like him, minister of interior, then prime minister, then ate his father, who was Jacques Chirac, and took his place, which is maybe what will happen with Valls and François Hollande. And it's incredible to see that they even share common gimmicks, you know, physical gimmicks and all. And so Manuel Valls is very sensible to the questions of security and all that. What is very specific is that him as a prime minister went himself to defend the law in the parliament, which is very unusual, and which shows a very strong interest in having it adopted. But the opposition we have so far is astounding, because we have members of all parties who are opposing the law. There are very few, because it's very hard to speak on these issues and very hard to speak on something where you would appear to be soft on terror, you know? But we have people from the left of the left, from Jean-Luc Mélenchon, Parti de Gauche, almost teaming up, if they hate each other, with the far right from Marine Le Pen. People from Sarkozy's party, from the Gaullist part of Sarkozy's party, some super liberal people of Sarkozy's party were against the law. And even within Hollande and Valls' party, the socialist, so-called socialist party, you have a vice president of the defense committee who announced his intention to vote against the law. So, this is what we achieved so far, but not only this. Le défenseur des droits, the right defender, who is actually a very right-winger guy, he used to be a member of the European Parliament, Jacques Toubon, and he was our adversary whenever it came to questions of copyright and ACTA and everything. And this guy, who is appointed by the government to denounce violations of rights within the administration, sent a hyper-violent legal criticism of the law. You have the CNCDH, the National Committee for Human Rights, once again appointed by government, whose opinion wasn't asked by the government, but gave its opinion nevertheless, who slammed the law. The Data Protection Authority, the CNIL, who slammed the law. The Digital Council, mostly focusing on digital economy, slammed the law. The Council of Europe super vehemently attacked the law as well. Three special rapporteurs of the UN, one to free speech, one to privacy, and one to human rights in general, harshly criticized the law in Le Monde. Even the editorial board of the New York Times titled French Surveillance State. So, and 700 companies, including Gandhi, the registrar, including OVH, which is a French company who is, I think, the biggest hoster in Europe. All of us, together with Amnesty, with Reporters Without Borders, with a union of judges, two unions of judges, actually totaling up 80% of the judges, plus the union of all lawyers, plus some super minority unions of police people, together against this law. So it's one of the broadest movements we've seen opposing any piece of legislation in France. But it will be adopted nevertheless because, you know, terrorism.
But when we come back to the Charlie Hebdo attacks, didn't the secret services knew the terrorists and because of all the surveillance
stuff? Of course. Maybe I shall answer to this question of the Constitutional Court before.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'll get back to this because, yeah, this is one of the key questions here. So it will be adopted in first reading in the Assemblée Nationale on Tuesday. Then it will continue its course to the Senate, probably in June, where it is quite unlikely that anything will change. Then there will be a challenge before the Constitutional Court. And the more opposition there would have been, the more votes against we would have obtained, the easier it will make it for the Constitutional Court to take its decision. Then we can attack administrative decrees implementing the law further to some to the Conseil d'État, the highest administrative jurisdiction. Then maybe individuals can attack the law because they will be subject to surveillance. So it's the beginning of the fight. The objective is to ban mass surveillance, to rule out mass surveillance. And of course, it will take a very long time. So it is just the beginning of the process. It is very frustrating indeed because we know it will be adopted. But still, the government is already in a very uncomfortable position. I told you that the Prime Minister Manuel Valls defended the law himself. François Hollande has to step up, which is very unusual. On TV, he had to take position in favor of the law and there's nothing violating fundamental freedoms. And to prove it, I myself, president, will challenge it in front of the Constitutional Court, which never happened in the course of the Fifth Republic for a normal law. So he does this to appear like the good guy, to try to reassure people from his majority, but the mere fact that he has to do this shows how uncomfortable is the government right now with our rightful opposition to the law. So it's just the beginning of the process. Now to answer your question, yes, there were massive intelligence flaws on the way to the attacks of Charlie Hebdo. Those guys were followed for more than a year, I think, by the secret services. They were already jailed to participate in some terror plot before, but 6 months before the attack, they were left out of surveillance and considered harmless, while they were actually going even more underground and prepare their attack. So the deficiencies here are human deficiencies and deficiencies on analysis, not on collection. Thinking that adding more sources of data will solve the analysis problem, I think, is really wrong. When you speak with the anti-terror people off the record, they tell you that what they do is, before everything, human intelligence. They need people who can infiltrate the networks, who can blend in, who can understand foreign languages, maybe Arabic, and be within the networks, maybe disrupt them from within, but collect information from within. This mass surveillance, mass collection, is a form of illusion. It's a sweet dream that is so easy to sell to politicians. I nicknamed that the hyper-security model, where you make everyone believe that if you throw more billions at it, if you add more technology, more black boxes, if you delegate more power and more trust, then we will catch the bad guys. But this comes with the assumption that the bad guys are anyone, that your enemy can be anybody, and therefore that you will invest billions into protecting everyone against everyone doing anything all the time. And this cannot work. This hyper-security is an illusion because anyone knowing security knows that you start with risk analysis. You build threat models. You try to be as precise as possible on what you will protect yourself against and who you will protect yourself against. And only when you have this, you can build proper security procedures, process, and measures. So this model is a lie. And we see it with Snowden documents and their slow processing and analysis over time. Is NSA doesn't do anything against mass surveillance. The New America Foundation, in its study, and they're not a bunch of leftists, the chairman of their board is now Eric Schmidt. They found out in their study that in less than 1% of terrorist cases that were foiled in the US, mass surveillance was useful. And it was a ridiculous case of a taxi driver giving 8,000 euros to Al-Qaeda. In the same time, we know that mass surveillance has been used for economic purpose and for political surveillance. And this is really what it's about. It is about devoiding surveillance technology from its purpose. It is putting it in the wrong hands for the wrong reasons. And all this wrapped into this incantations of hyper security. Trust us, give us more money, and everything will go fine. And it is in a way a self-fulfilling prophecy, because when everything goes fine, you see it's working. And when everything fails, when there is a bomb detonating, when there is gunshots being fired, you see it's working, but not enough. Therefore, we need more billions, more money, more resources, less oversight. And it is a downward spiral. I think we have to invent new narratives to counter those hyper-dominant narratives that terror is the worst thing that can happen to us. Statistically, it's untrue. You have, maybe 5 people dying of terrorism each year in France, when 500,000 die of cancer. Maybe as many die of cardiovascular disease, obesity, asbestos, and so on and so on. All these are 1,000 times more dangerous than terrorism. So I think we have to invent new storytelling, new rhetorics to dismantle the fear that is the fuel of this war on terror. The same way we have to create new narratives to explain surveillance and mass surveillance, first of all, in a way that will relate more to people. And I'm convinced, for instance, that instead of talking of privacy and fundamental rights and, the Enlightenment and all those super high-level concepts, it's way easier to speak about violating our intimacy. Intimacy is when you're naked, is when you're in full trust, is when you're in your bedroom, is when you decide to share this or not with somebody else you trust, is when you experiment with yourself, is when you experiment with new ideas, with new practices. Intimacy is something very concrete that everybody understands, that everybody values, without having to invoke the fundamental freedoms and high-level concepts like this. I think that's one way. That's one trail to follow, maybe. Another one would be to have discourses, storytelling, that would generate less anxiety and less fear than what we do when we speak about mass surveillance. Oh, they're everyone. They see every key you press. They're in your computer. When this generates fear, people are afraid. They self-censor. They act less, and we want them to act more. So I think humor is a way to go against fear. Very efficient way to get rid of fear, to empower people, to give courage to people. So, yeah, as a conclusion to this, I think we need storytelling, we need stories, we need rhetorics based on more humoristic, less fear-inducing, and more closer to the people in order to try and break these toxic rhetorics of the war on terror.
Okay, let's come back to France. Mm-hmm. There will be the vote on the 5th of May. Will it be the final vote, or is there a second chamber voting?
Well, it will be the final vote in the Assemblée Nationale, in the first chamber, because of the emergency procedure. And there will be actually some big events the day before, on the 4th. There will be a big protest. There will be a 6 hours live from Mediapart, the independent investigative news outlet. There will be a big operation with citizens calling their members of parliament. Lots of you'll see the French Twitters bursting in flames.
What is the hashtag?
The hashtag is PJL Renseignement. It's very long and very French. PJLRENSEIGNEMENT.
You know that Twitter has only 140 characters.
I know. But you Germans are not afraid of long words, are you?
Not on Twitter.
Yes, right. But you'll see it around. Every vote we can get against the law, every intervention from a member that is entitled to an explanation of vote, so to speak out of why he or she will vote against, will be useful in the rest of the debate. But yes, it will be the final vote in the Assemblée Nationale. Then it will move on to the Senate. Members of the Senate are not directly elected by the people, so we usually have even less influence on them because they don't give a shit. So we don't expect much to change there, and the Senate is more right-wing than the first chamber. So it is very likely that our arguments won't go as far as they went with the Assemblée Nationale. Then if they disagree, if there are changes in the Senate, it will go back to this commission mixte paritaire with 7 members of the Assemblée and 7 members of the Senate that will negotiate the outstanding bits, and then the final text will be adopted, but a very formal adoption in the Assemblée Nationale, and will be ratified by the president.
How far is it away?
Probably by the end of June.
Okay.
And so you'll hear more about it. But so far, it has been quite an impressive public debate when, for instance, much of the French press understood that they were concerned by that. Like if the Snowden documents were somehow useful, which is funny to say, but we didn't have in France such a vibrant public debate as what is happening in Germany since day one of Snowden revelation. I have the impression with parliamentary oversight committee with their Spiegel keeping on pumping. I have the impression that it is an ongoing debate in Germany, when in France and in many countries, oh yeah, people spoke about it, Snowden, oh my, it's terrible. And then a few months after, it was, oh, who was this guy again? So I nevertheless have the impression that journalists were all very much shocked and influenced by Snowden, and that they come in this debate on the surveillance bill with Snowden in mind. I also have the impression that we can very much, well, first of all, documenting what's happening in France right now is useful for everyone in the world as a much more vivid example than the Patriot Act or the Data Retention Directive that nobody cared about at the time, of what happens in a modern so-called Western democracy when any violent event happens. And within 3 months, you have a terrible law being adopted. Everybody, you know, with their hand on the heart, saying, yeah, national union against barbary. So I think it is a very useful example, a useful reminder of how the shock doctrine is a powerful way of imposing unacceptable legislation on the people. But the same way, I think what is happening right now with the BND is a vivid example that I hope we will be able to re-inject in the French debate of what happens when those intelligence agencies get completely out of hand, completely out of control, and become a state within the state. This is what's happening in France when the DGSE and the DGSI, the respectively the external and internal secret services, become a political actor. They draft a law for themselves, they draft their budget law, then they go through the ministries with their special back channels to make sure that it will be on the table, then have their selected members of parliament who are at the same time in their oversight committee and the rapporteur of the law that gives them full power, and their main lobbyist and advocate in the person of Jean-Jacques Urvoas, these entities become a state within a state, they become a political actor, and they in the end work for their own interest, and at some stage their own interest goes against general interest. This is what we see with BND. So I hope there will be more reporting on the BND case, more reporting in English as well, that we can translate in France and go to the members of the parliament and members of the Senate and tell them, this is really what you want to France? You really want to give those guys full power, to leave them the keys of the state and make them able to build this turnkey authoritarian regime? Just imagine what it will be if Marine Le Pen comes in power in some month in France. And what imagine what close to fascist right-wing people could do with such an apparatus in their hands. I think this is the kind of arguments we have to make today.
Okay, we wish you good luck. Unfortunately, we have half an hour.
Oh, yeah, that's enough already. Thank you for the
lunch.
Thank you for the opportunity. And see you all at Republica.
Yeah, wish you good luck in France and good luck with the Constitutional Court.
Yes.
Or even the European Court of Justice.
We'll need it. Thank you.
Thank you.